afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It is July 12th, 2026. Just for reference, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
What do you got for us, Willis?
Well,
what went on this week?
What went on? Well, it was a...
Nobody lives through 2026. I guess that's what we're learning.
Yeah, no kidding. 2026 has not been a good year so far.
No. It's taking everybody out.
Yep.
One person it didn't take out, thank goodness, well, it's you, for starters, but is the plumber. Tell you what, you need a plumber sometimes. Sometimes you decide to do it yourself. Ooh, bad idea. Never works out. Alex, can you do plumbing?
No, that is not one talent that I possess.
Non-starter?
No.
Yeah, we were going to replace all these faucets in our bathroom, so it was like 5 faucets, right? And I'm thinking, that's not that hard. I've replaced faucets before. And then I'm thinking, oh, I'll be upside down in the cupboard, and it's going to hurt my back. That's going to suck. I'm going to have to pay for the chiropractor. I thought, it'd be cheaper to hire a plumber. So I charged us a flat rate to do these faucets, and the first 3 faucets took like the entire day. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a much higher bill than I planned on. This is going to suck. He had to come back and do the other 2 faucets on a different day because basically the day ran out. There was kind of a leak and there was a drain issue and there was a thing and another thing. And I thought, yeah, my home improvement project, boo.
When your first thought is, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not going to be a good day.
Yeah, read the tea leaves. Well, the thing is, he only charged me the flat rate for all the faucets. Even though it took him like the whole day, and it wasn't his fault. It was really the... He even fixed my neighbor's faucet because we used her hose to wash something out because my water was off, and then the handle flew off, and so she got a free faucet fix out of it. But his name is Robert Gutierrez. If you live in the Reading area, you should call the Hot Water Plumbing Hero because, honestly, he is a hot water plumbing hero. He was the one who saved us when our hot water heater broke, and we wound up having to take showers at the clubhouse, and, yeah, it was a whole big thing. Robert saved us then. We had him come back and do faucets, and he's coming back to do the toilets, too, because we have some stuff going on there. And he, like, fixed that, and then we're calling the home warranty, and he's going to do it under that. So, Hot Water Plumbing Hero, can't go wrong. And their website, I think, is hotwaterplumbinghero.com, but I forgot to pull it up on my phone correctly. And let's see if I can do that really, really fast. Oh, of course not. I'll look it up. We'll do it at the break. So if you're having a plumbing issue, I got the guy. You should use him. It'll save you time. All right. So speaking of supply chain problems.
Speaking of that.
That's my segue. Speaking of supply chain problems, this whole thing with the oil and gas issue, all the types of fuel, maybe we should say a fuels issue in California, we have been covering this extensively. And the fact that it hasn't really necessarily, it's hit the media for those of us that are watching, but a lot of people aren't watching and they're like, oh, you guys are alarmists. You said that there was going to be shortages and all this stuff and nothing's happening. Today might give you a little window into maybe why that hasn't happened yet. And help you understand that that doesn't mean it's not coming. So I've 2 people for you today. We have Mike Ariza, who is a refinery operations specialist, and he has been on for a long time. He started this mess, not the lack of fuels, but he used to work at the Benicia refinery there and called my office, and we got to talking, and that's what sparked this whole extended discussion back in December. So we have a tab on the page. You can get to it directly by going to gascrisis.org. And I added another drop down under that today for just the supply chain issue. I was going to put it in the articles. We have articles. We have video. We've got a ton of interviews. There's a lot of really good information. We've got letters from the refineries on how the California Air Resources Board is impacting their ability to operate and or decisions to leave, which I'm sure we'll cover today. But all of that is on there. You can go read it, send it to people. You can listen. You've got every media available for you, watching, reading, listening. And the supply chain is one specific thing. So we have CJ Nord on with us today. She has a company called Supply Chains for Good. So with I hate reading the bio because it makes people sound boring, and they're much more interesting than that. But she has worked with government, private entities, and bottom line is her whole focus is to avert major disruptions to the supply chain, which is probably how she got interested in the fuels issue, and to support public safety. In 2019, her personal battle with cancer fueled her drive to make broader impact, leading her to establish supply chains for good, protectors of children and family prosperity. Wouldn't you think that the government should have that as their tagline, you know, protecting children and family prosperity? We don't, though. Through this innovative platform, she leverages supply chain methodologies to tackle pressing societal issues, driving legislative changes, and fostering impactful initiatives. Notably, she's the architect behind the pioneering There's Cash in That Trash, which is a profit-driven circularity program. That's a new word, circularity. I think she invented it. Supplychainsforgood.org is the website. She does all sorts of things, and I'm skipping to the bottom because we'll add the other things in later, but her dog is still unimpressed. And I included the dog's picture, who is wearing a tie. It's probably why they're unimpressed, because if you have a dog that wears a tie, I mean, it's pretty hard to impress them. Our dog is small. I shoved her in the shower this morning. She was unimpressed, too.
She was very unimpressed.
Super unimpressed.
She liked it when she got out, though.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so Mike and CJ, I hope you're not having any plumbing problems, and I hope you've got some, I was going to say good news on the fuels front, but I think that that announcement's way premature. I don't know who wants to start. We're all in different places, just for context here. So Bill and I are in the studio. Mike's probably on his way to work, and CJ is probably ironing ties for her dog. I'm not sure. Because that tie looks very pressed.
He has very high standards.
It looks right? Looks like very high standards. That's what happens when you have short hair. You get outfits. Well, the one thing I really do hope people go to the page for today, because your graphic on the California fuel supply chain then and now, like before refinery closures and after refinery closures, actually,
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's the best snapshot, really. If you were going to look at this as a snapshot, the issue, it lays out all the economic problems, national security problems, and I don't think people realize like the emissions and all that. I'm kind of excited for you to tell us about that, but you guys can start wherever you want. You chat together frequently.
Yes, we do. We've actually adopted each other.
Nice.
Normally as siblings.
Brother and sister.
Got a prenup on the dog, though?
By the way, the dog's name is Maxwell Smart, and that's the closest I get to a boss.
Missed it by that much. Yes, Maxwell Smart, my favorite. He's my hero.
Hey, Aaron, before we go too much further, you said something that made me laugh so hard, and I just want to talk about that just a little
circularity?
Bit.
Circularity?
As you said, that did get a laugh out of me, too, though. The mission of my company is the protection of children and family prosperity, and yes, by all means, that should be the tagline for government, because government is only our supplier of services and infrastructure. That's their job. That's their only job.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Right?
And instead,
yeah,
we're doing all sorts of other stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really do like that. I mean, that is the whole point, right? This, like, the supply chain in general is supposed to basically make it so that we're not weaving our own clothes at our house. I mean, this is why we can go out and function and do other things, because we have a supply chain.
Absolutely. It absolutely is that. And the people that, you know, the elected officials who, whether we like them to or not, are manipulating our supply chain, our livelihood, all the rest of that, they don't know anything about supply chain. They don't know how to do it. And then we see error after error after error come up that we're all subjected to, right? And this issue with the fuel situation is certainly one of those errors, and they've absolutely, in this effort to protect the environment, blown it. They've blown it. Because the CO2 emissions from the ocean freight are, what, 500,000 metric tons a year?
Yeah, and the whole point of getting rid of the refineries was supposed to make, because we had to get rid of all those dirty refineries and all that nasty oil that we were bringing up out of the ground, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, that isn't the net result of that.
No, and, you know, I think this is all one of the contributing elements that I see that got us here is we're Americans, as Californians, all the rest of that, we're infighting too much. And, you know, and whether or not we disagree about people on their fundamental beliefs, we all have work that we need to do together.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the examples of folks doing that well is the Problem Solver Caucus in Sacramento. You know, they're just putting all those differences aside. And, you know, math is math. And you know, we can all get together and agree on the results of mathematical.
Well, apparently we can't, but we should.
Well, you know,
because that should be called a fact, right? Facts should be facts.
Well, one of the things that supply chain teaches you is how to really analyze data, right? One of the things that we might get shouted at us by a boss in case we've blown an analysis is you need to know why the data is the data. You don't need to just know the data. Don't just show me a bunch of numbers. Why is that data the data, right? And that makes you dig in just a heck of a lot deeper. And when we started digging into why is that data the data, we started to find things like the port capacity maybe being maybe the electives were presented with the theoretical port capacity rather than actual. Maybe the electives were only presented with fuel sales as a result of taxable sales, which overlooked military and aviation, right? So I'm not even sure that the data provided was accurate to begin with.
But then there's logic, right? So at some point you look at that and you think, well, I might need... I mean, can you think of a scenario where a person who cared about the issue, who was, you know, fairly smart, could look at a skewed set of data and decide that it was smart to close all our refineries?
Can I think of a logical?
Yeah, I mean, can you think of something that would have been presented that didn't like ping all your spidey senses and you're like, hey, wait a second. You know, I mean, how did they get sold that bill of goods, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot. You know, we could certainly have lots of discussions about how we got here, and you know, together if we're off the air and you're sharing a bottle of wine, we could have a deeper discussion, right? But really, the problem at hand, the problem that's literally in our hands that we have to solve, is the situation that we're in right now, and we've got we of course have. Let me just run through this a little bit. So the fuel supply chain, really the petroleum supply chain, has multiple phases. And anybody could talk about how each one of the political parties, or the major political parties, maybe owns a piece of the disruption for each phase of it. So up, as we say, upstream, closest to the extraction point, there's been damage to the extraction oil field infrastructure that will probably take years to get back together. And that's years and billions of dollars until that's restored, and that's after the fighting stops, right? There's the logistical problem that we all see on the news. Now, even if we got oil tomorrow, we couldn't make it into fuel, and that capacity to make oil into fuel and the oil upstream, that's gone from the world. There's no replacement for it in place, right? That's something that people need to really understand. They seem to think that something comes together and magically that problem gets solved. Nuh-uh. There's no magical solution to this. The third that I think really should be on people's radar, because we don't want to forget something so important, is that we have lost a lot of gas stations in rural communities, you know, your mom-and-pop gas stations. I'm not sure exactly how many closed, but that was due to the requirement for the dual underground tank. And we may, that needs to be mapped for emergency preparedness, because a lot of that's wildfire-prone areas. And we may end up with a situation where, you know what, the fire truck can't refuel. We can't put that fire out because we can't refuel.
Sure, too much distance.
Exactly. And, you know, they used to think it was there, and now it's 40 miles away, right? So each phase of the petroleum supply chain has got a major problem in it, and that's why I'm proposing to our elected in D.C. that, you know, we use whatever, if it takes federal money to reopen Valero, let's do it. Let's bring the CBs and the Army Corps of Engineers into this. We have to reopen that refinery as rapidly as possible. We also need to, for the good of the nation, extract California oil. Maybe we don't need to do that forever, but we've got to do it right now. And those are just, as I see it, really hard facts, and those are what we need to do to protect children and families, not just in California, but everywhere.
Sure. And I'm curious, let's take a really quick break and come back. I'm curious if you have gamed out the, you know, the ability of them to, you know, sue all of that, stop it, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of curious on that one, because it seems like that's where everything winds up, wrapped around, you know, an axle somewhere with a judge. Got to take a really quick break. Obviously, this is going to be another cheerful show. All the fun was at the beginning, but the fun is over. There will be some intermittent screwing around, and there may be some funny songs, but other than that, you should probably switch to decaf right now.
Yep.
So you are listening to We the People, and you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.com.
Oh, but ain't that America? You and me, ain't that America? Something to see, baby, ain't that America? Home of the free, yeah. Little pink houses for you and me.
Celebrated the imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. Maybe shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of reentering the atmosphere too soon.
Okay, so I want to put that guy in charge of the legislature. He's the guy giving the information to people making the decisions. Somebody needs to get their slide rule from school. What the heck? So if we did that, I'm using the term we loosely, but if that were to be done, the federal government were to come in and say, look, you guys are creating a massive national security problem, and obviously you don't care. So we're going to reopen this refinery and do all those things that you said. Do you think that's possible to actually do in a timely fashion, or would they just be tangled up forever?
Well, let me just say this about that.
I mean, obviously we're just spitballing here, you know, me and you.
Yeah, no, it has to be done. And, you know, whenever people ask questions like that, and believe me, Erin, it's 100% a valid question, and I totally get where you're coming from on it. You know what it always reminds me of is during World War II, the time he's right here at my feet, naturally. Anyway, no, it reminds me of Winston Churchill during World War II and the Tiny Fleet. And the Tiny Fleet was the UK's fishing boat. People with just boats, citizens with boats, came and literally rescued their military in a situation where most of the British military was in trouble. Literally, people coming out of their homes going, nobody's going to get our boys but us, right? If you look, if somebody had said even a day before that happened, if that could happen, they would say that's flatly impossible. We have to have our Winston Churchill hat on and power through whatever impossible we meet along the way.
Yeah.
You know, if we're defeated by impossible, I would say it's because...
Oh, well, I would never say it's not worth
smart enough.
Yeah, not worth doing. I mean, obviously, it's 100% worth doing, and doing nothing. How about this?
Not an option.
Do you want to move forward with this? Do you want to take the bird's eye view from if we do nothing, this is how it turns out, or we have to do something and this is what it looks like? Because those are really two different sort of routes. Which route you want to take us on?
I'm going to take it on that we have to do something because we have to.
Okay.
Right? And also because as unreasonable as it seems, I think that there are enough political elements involved for it to move to the next level. So I absolutely concede that there's some really severe lack of logic being demonstrated at the state and also the municipal level. Now that matters when that municipality is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right? As, you know, Los Angeles is as big as many states. You know, so it matters that that's the municipality. And that's why I've gone to California's federally elected senators and congresspeople and asked them to have essentially California take care of its own house, right? The federal level for California elected come and intervene at the state and local level, and let's get our house in order before FEMA and the DOD exercise the powers that they have during wartime and that this situation warrants. And, you know, I think that the people who... are watching the actions of the folks that are like really kind of severe on one side when it comes to environmental, and that, you know, we're all back here. Everybody else cares about the environment too. I'm, you know, proud to say that I'm an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Sioux, right? And so they don't own love for the environment. The rest of us love it, too. Their math doesn't work. Their logic doesn't work, right? And I think that if the folks who everybody is viewing as you're putting California out of business, you're doing all of this stupid stuff, if they step up and say, you know what, we finally hear you, we're going to get moving on fixing it, as hard as that is, they will find that the response to that demonstration of integrity is really strong and really positive. Because the best leaders step up and say, you know what, I was wrong about that. Sorry, let me fix it. Those are the best leaders in the world. So hopefully they see the light there. But if not, you know, we're going to manage our supplier of services and infrastructure and do our best to make them, you know, see the light and do the right.
Yeah. And that, Because the graphic that people can't see, I mean, the good news is, you know, we can all do these interviews and, you know, our T-shirts with our hair standing on end, you know, so there's kind of a benefit there. But then there's the part about we could even drink wine together, actually, like this, because wine makes everyone in my family wear other people's clothes. So, you know, we could do that over the radio, too. That would be a lot less telling. But
all right.
I like that, Mike. I like the groan in the background. That was well timed.
Or maybe whiskey shots.
That doesn't make us wear other people's clothes, actually. That just makes us talk faster. But this graphic, I'm looking at this graphic, and I can't show anybody this because we're on the air, but or on the radio. But on the one side, you know, before the refinery closure, the local supply chain was California oil production to the California refinery, to the pipeline and trucks, to the consumer. Four little deals. The next one has seven. Seven. I mean, this is what they've turned it into. So, and it starts with foreign oil. You would think that would be the deal breaker right there.
You know, one of the things that we're not talking about, that Mike and I, we talked about this, and this helped lean into his expertise.
if he wants to be seen
sure
with us right now.
Fuel? Yeah, I don't. If he does, he's a love. Everybody's sure that fuel coming through our ports is of the same quality as the stuff that was made
exactly.
in California. I'm sure it's not going to solve it. I'm sure it's not going to raise any vehicle warranty problems. Oh, I'm sure it's fine to put into our BMWs and Mercedes in California. It won't cause any engine damage. No, don't worry about that.
Well, I'm sure they test it all when it comes in. You know, I'm sure it's all tested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch those assumptions. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of Stan's biggest points.
Yeah, because that's...
Doctor, brother.
That's just a huge consideration. And getting out from under that... So if you were going to sketch this for somebody who really didn't understand the difference between, you know, using our own oil, the four-part deal. Our refineries, our pipelines off to the consumer. And then you're going to go to foreign oil, foreign refineries, ocean tankers, California ports, storage terminals, trucks, and then the consumer. I like that you have like your benefits, you know, shorter distance, multiple supply points, stronger energy independence. I just don't think people realize how big a deal that is. And supports California jobs and tax revenue back to the families and safety and whatnot.
Right.
But the other, after the refineries close, the risks, greater dependence on foreign supply and global events. Well, I think the history of late would prove that. Vulnerable to port disruption, you have labor disputes, fires, earthquakes, weather, cyber attacks, military incidents, higher cost, longer lead times, higher transportation-related emissions. So for the environmentalists, there you go. Increased pressure on every link in the supply chain, and reduced energy resilience and national security. There's like no benefit to that.
Well, I don't see how you ever get back to an affordable price on fuel if you maintain that system. I can't see prices ever going down.
They won't go down. They will only go up. Whenever you have removed a source of supply, price will go up. Period. End of story. That's why they call it the law of supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had talked to Mike a little bit before the show about those supply chains. Can you speak to that?
Well, going with the impact of the war, we started seeing crude oil cut off to all of the Asian countries that were supplying us. Remember, we're importing 35 to 40% of all of our fuel now is being imported from Asia. When that crude oil got shut off, and this is where, you know, people would say, well, you know, you were saying we were going to run out. Well, Professor Miche USC Professor Miche, Professor Rector from Berkeley, and Joe Silvey, he's like a grad student. They all generated a two-page brief, and that went up to the president's level. And their estimates were spot on. It's like the professor says, the math is the math. We were literally on the verge of running out of fuel in May, going in the middle of May. We were getting very, very low. So the biggest thing that really saved California's bacon was the fact that the president waived the Jones Act. What that did, and to let people know, the Jones Act requires American-built and American-staffed tankers or other ships to transport goods from American port to American port. That number of tankers is very limited, and the feds saw the fact that California was, you know, and they're not reporting it to us. The state definitely not saying anything. We were running out of fuel. We were on our way, just like that report said. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the examples and charts that are published now is in the last month and a half, jet fuel that was shipped to us, just in the last month and a half, there's been more jet fuel shipped to the West Coast from the Gulf Coast than what's been shipped in the last 36 years combined. We were that low. We're still low on fuel. We're still low on gasoline. We're still on the verge of experiencing, or in some locations in California, having shortages at this time. That's the same thing with diesel, same thing with gasoline. The refineries are running at 98% on the Gulf Coast, which they can't sustain that forever. And where we have wrote all the way back in our brief in October about the threat to the military, well, if you look at this one graph, they've taken a lot of fuel from defensive zone 3, pad 3, and pad 1, and shipped them over to us because we were running out. So we're taking fuel reserved for other sections of the country, and that the 98% increase on the refineries could not keep up with what we lost. I knew that. You don't have to be a math wizard. It wasn't going to do it. So they have, in fact, been pulling fuel reserves from all over the country with these foreign flag tankers and sending them here. Chevron's been taking Strategic Petroleum Reserve crude oil for the first time ever, shipping it across Panama and then up to California. Hawaii took its first motor gasoline shipments ever in its history from the Gulf Coast. So we were in danger. The report that Miche, Rector, and Sylvie wrote on April 15th that was published, that report was spot on. At the time, the math was the math, and we're still in deep trouble right now. There's been 39 million barrels total of fuel shipped to the West Coast in the last, like, month. And we're still short across all boards right now.
Wow.
I just wanted to add that there are fuel shortages right now at the pump. I went to a Shell station in Long Beach not too long ago, and they were out of two of the three gasoline grades. They only had premium grade. And that's in Long Beach, not far from the port.
Hmm. Yeah, so exactly. That's not a remote area. Right. That's right where everything is.
Right by the port, yeah. Exactly. It doesn't have far to go, right? So if you haven't seen shortages at the pump yet, rest assured you will. It's coming. It just, you know, this is a long supply chain, and there was a lot of product in the, as we call it, the downstream part of the supply chain that is closest to the customer. There's a lot moving through the system, but when that moves all the way through the system, we have these massive gaps behind it that have never existed in the 20th or the 21st century. It's never been this.
Exactly.
See, and as somebody who studies the supply chain, that's that should be a wake-up call, actually. That should be a massive wake-up call.
This situation is, I'm not exaggerating, this is worse than the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
It's worse than the pandemic, and it is probably on par with what people experienced during World War II. And the one thing that we had during times of war was this War Production Board, where it overlooked the industries of major importance to the military, like steel, right? And said, hey, you need to adjust your production up a little bit, you need to adjust your production down a little bit. It kind of guided the supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore. That's something that I'm actually proposing, that a agency or a wise governing body, whatever you want to call it, that is sort of like the Fed for the supply chain, that something like that be created in the United States.
Which is pretty
out of our
I mean this yeah. is such a stinging admission on California government, because when this kind of stuff is just alarming to me, because when we're looking at the federal government to save us, you know, honestly, alarm bells should go off in everyone's head. Like, we need more federal government intervention, said usually no one ever. And now that's the escape hatch,
yeah,
which is creepy.
So let me ask.
Okay, we're going to ask her right when we come back, because now we're tardy. So we're coming back, and it's Bill's and it's Bill's turn after the tardy break. Our guest, though, I've had questions. Our guest is C.J. Nord. Mike Ariza has been our guest before. We have him featured prominently at gascrisis.org. We are adding C.J. Nord to our list of best friends. She has 30 years of distinguished leadership in the manufacturing sector, recognized for her supply chain acumen, visionary thinking, steadfast commitment to ethical standards, and her terrific dog and sense of humor. We'll be right back with the both of them. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Transition.
And then there's that. All right. Back to Bill.
Yeah, I just was curious. You know, we have a shortage in the making. You were saying that there are some stations that are already out of certain grades. How do they determine where and who gets the supply we are receiving? How do they depend? Because that's not like government contracts bringing fuel into California. These are private companies that are contracting to ship this gas in. Now, how do they determine where it goes?
You really are asking a very good question, and those are questions that I have asked for state elected officials to meet with me about, and I've also asked for both Valero and Phillips 66 to meet with me about that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be really honest here. I'm terrified that nobody is minding the shop.
Right.
And I would really like to know if the purchases of fuel are being made on the spot market, kind of catch as catch can.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we have a contract that is equal to how much fuel California uses.
Right.
Nobody is answering those critical questions that you just asked.
Yikes.
And, you know, that's where a supply chain Fed would have, they'd have their fingers in that. They wouldn't,
sure.
They'd have that data. They'd know the answers to those questions. Nobody's answering those questions, and that is freaking me out.
Yeah, because I see, I kind of see the military as priority. And as far as consumers receiving gasoline, it wouldn't surprise me to see the bigger metropolitan areas get first grab at everything, and the outlying areas, and you know, like all of Northern California is very spread out, kind of being at the bottom of the list. I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
It does. One of the things that I think that really concerns me a lot that we're not seeing happen right now are efforts to ration fuel. You know, we're not seeing that.
We should be cutting back. Yeah.
Right. There should be discussions about, you know, back in, I'm probably not the only OG on this phone call, right? Remember during Carter's administration, we lowered the speed limit. That's an example of something simple that we can do to decrease the amount of fuel that we use. There's lots of little ways that we could make our fuel stretch further without looking at the whole picture. We don't know that maybe Redding only has 2 days of fuel and maybe Los Angeles County has 40 days. Well, you know, we're not doing anything to balance supply with demand because there's no oversight over the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a gap that should be on everybody's radar, and that should be really one of the major concerns.
Well, my concern is that this is going to become a huge political issue. And politics is going to play a major role in who's going to get gas and who isn't. And, boy, what a way to control the population to just say, you know, you folks up there have been a problem. You're going to have to just wait for your fuel. You folks down here have been loyal and, you know, you've been doing a good job. You're going to get your fuel first. Man, I can see riots in the streets over that.
Then there's Nevada.
Yeah,
there's the people trapped in the back. Well, they're not even, we've always kind of...
Arizona.
Yeah, we've always joked about those guys as being stuck in the back seat and they can't reach the steering wheel. But I think at this point, they're mostly tied up in the trunk.
They're on the end of the pipeline.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
We are up here, too. We are up here, too, in Chico and Redding. The terminals end here. Pipelines end here.
Yeah, it's turning into that meme. What is it? I will put you in a trunk and help people look for you. that's pretty much where we are.
Yeah, and going back to like reanimating Valero. The two of us met. I emailed Dora from California Insider because I saw CJ on there, and it's like, man, that lady really knows a lot about logistics. I'd love to talk with her, and that's how we got together and became buds, you know. And we've been, like she said, we've been kind of working together ever since. The thing with like Valero, you can get, you know, I think there is possibility, there's hope, like CJ is saying, about getting some of these people together, especially these federal representatives of the state, and saying, hey, we need to get some relief on this air requirement, you know, different things to ease up. Because right now, we still got the three letters from the three oil corporations saying, we're going to leave. And now community action group is suing. This is a jewel. There's a community action group, I saw in the LA Times, suing the Air Resource Board because the Air Resource Board changed their, cap and invest requirements, limits, or whatever you want to call it. They adjusted it to help accommodate the other three corporations, seeing that Valero's, you know, basically told them pack sand, shut down, took the $1.1 billion write-off and left the state. Now they got these three letters, and I think they like CJ is saying, some of these folks saw the light or are seeing the light. They saw the light. They made some adjustments to this cap and invest, which is what they wanted, and it was a reasonable request from all three companies, so they were really going to run them through the ringer. And now that they've done that, and for the moment, it looks like they're not going to leave, although we don't know that. We're not in those board meetings. I mean, especially the smaller corporation, PBF. Chevron, they own a lot of oil here, so they're in a different boat. But now you got a company suing the Air Board for actually making a move in the right direction. You know, I could see these companies, you know, PBF, you're going, you know what, never mind, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, we're done with this. So those are the people that, you know, need to get, they need to, like CJ's been actively, aggressively working on this stuff, to get them to, you know, come around and say, hey guys, we're in a bad spot here. We're in a real bad spot and you need to make some changes. You need to turn the ship here a little bit, or we're going to be in a dire, supply situation. And as far as Valero is concerned, Valero, you're looking at a minimum of $1 billion to bring it back online. And like I wrote 3 or 4 months ago, past the point of no return, you know, your qualified people to bring it back online. I had a couple friends say that they didn't.
That's the kicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Mike. And so who's going to run it?
Well, that's the thing. You got people like me, but a lot of the people transferred, the personnel, the ladies and the gentlemen that worked there, they transferred to Louisiana. They transferred to Texas. It's like, you think you're going to get them to come back? No. It's just like, it ain't going to happen. You know, some of them, like a lot of my friends hired on in 1990 and they're retired or they're about to retire. But two of them wrote to me that Valero left it in a very unsafe condition. One of them said, Mike, I was very, very concerned for the safety of everybody at the last part of that when it was shut down because they fixed absolutely nothing. So you gotta replace all these different. Oh gosh, there's so much you have to do. Okay. And I was talking with Professor Miche before and it's looking like $800-900 million. But after I've heard about this, and I know some of the things mechanically that they have to inspect and fix just on the base case, and getting these reports from my friends that I worked with, it's going to be well over $1 billion to bring it back online. That one, it's better to not have the federal intervention, but I don't, at this point, I mean, CJ's been doing this logistics for a lot longer than I have, but at this point, I don't see how Valero is going to be able to come back up without some type of federal intervention. With the Defense Production Act. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's very, very difficult. And again, you got to go back to where are the people to start it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can throw money at it, but if you haven't got anybody to run it, that's going to be a problem.
Well,
I'll go do it, but it's hard for me to do myself.
Yeah. Well,
that's why I had suggested bringing in the Army Corps of Engineers and the Seabees. That helps get it up and running. Now, in terms of getting people on the refinery floor, you know, there's no replacement for experience, but there are lots of people who would like a good job at a refinery. A lot of them are the high school students that I work with that are not college-bound students. There's just tons of great kids in high school who are learning how to be an electrician, a plumber, a mechanic. They're, you know, learning how to work with their hands because that's what they want to do, right? So I think that if we took the right approach to it, that we could fill the jobs. Those are really good jobs, right? Somebody's got to come up with $1 billion to restart it. It's not Valero's fault, right? We broke it. We got to fix it.
Yeah. We caused them to abandon ship. I mean, that wasn't an abandoned ship of their own. Wasn't their idea. How about that?
Right. So that money's got to come out somewhere, and you know that's where federal and state have to work together.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. This is all brought on. This is all self, you know, caused. And when you talk about bringing it back online, you know, with a $1 billion price tag, that I don't see any other way around it. But I just see that's going to trickle down to the consumer is going to pay for that. And again,
the bloodbath.
Oh yeah,
man, the news is going to cut us off with more happiness.
Well, you're looking at a huge price increase.
This just in: we're getting cut off by the news. You're listening to We the People, and your music selection will be here shortly. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All my ways and blame, I like to know I'm better on public education. Blame smoke on the fire, blame fire on the smoke, blame the fight on the bouncer that couldn't take a joke, but it ain't my fault.
Second hour of We the People Radio. It is Sunday, July 12th, 2026, all day today. At least that's the rumor. Although Florida's getting rid of daylight savings time, so they might get either more day or less day. I'm not sure how that works. I think everyone dreams of getting rid of daylight savings time, actually.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it? It'd be so much fun. You could stop messing with your clocks. You could put them way up high and have tricky clocks and never have to touch them again. Not have to get the directions out for your watch, all that stuff.
So the news just said oil demand has gone down.
I know.
What in the... won't say the word. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Well, is that a million barrels a day worldwide, or is that like in one particular... Because a million barrels worldwide is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, right?
If you're looking at the world market.
This is like... What a rookie mistake. Okay, what a rookie mistake. That is just like, I howled with laughter when I heard that. Was, oh my God. They are equating out of stock with a reduction in demand.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know what? If I don't have any beef on the shelf, all of a sudden I have a reduced amount of demand on beef.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any.
Because you, yeah.
Okay? Right. It's like, when, and the. This is like, tell me that you don't know jack about supply chain without telling me you don't know jack about supply chain. That was a ridiculous statement for them to make.
I like it. See, that's how we find out what people really think. You put something kind of just stupid and offensive on the news, and then, what did you think about that?
Oh, we're going to be okay now.
So for the people who are listening to this on the ARC,
okay, the problem is solved.
Yep, we're saved. Actually, we're saved. It's this show. We're going to change topics now. We're going to talk about CJ's dog for the rest of the hour because. Our fuel problems are over. So CJ, for the people who would listen to this on the archive, who are a lot of people, and they're like, what are they talking about? Because the news won't be on the archive. Explain what they said and why it's stupid, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, so during a period of time where there's been an immense reduction in the amount of oil and fuel supply, they're saying that there is a reduction in the demand, in other words, the need.
Yeah.
And that was the actual news. Someone made that a news story in a 5-minute news break, and that was newsy enough to qualify. Like, so they're telling everyone that that's a national news feed. It wasn't anything to do with the station, just to clear that up. But
I firmly believe that supply chain should be taught at the high school level because it teaches you a certain kind of reasoning that appears to be absent. It really is how systems work. Supply chain is the science of systems. If you learn it, you're going to learn how to run any system better. It's really a fundamental skill. And it keeps newscasters from making silly statements like, hey, you know, there seems to be a reduction in global petroleum demand at a time when there's a reduction in global petroleum supply.
Yeah.
And they're not equating one with the other.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How much, if I didn't have any post-its then I wouldn't sell any Post-its.
Right.
Right.
So when a tanker comes in full of gasoline, which I guess most of our gas now is going to be coming in on tankers, how much gasoline does a tanker hold?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill.
Can I give you a figure that I do have off the top of my head? It will take, you know, of course, we're gonna have a lot more large tanker trucks hauling out of the port, hauling fuel out of the port now.
Oh, sure.
Statewide, if that happens, 365 days of the year, we'll put another 1,200 tanker trucks on the road daily.
Daily.
Yeah, so that's the figure in tanker trucks.
What could go wrong?
Oh, it doesn't exist.
Well, yeah, right?
You have shortages in equipment, you have shortages in drivers, and there are multiple points across our fire-prone state where we do not allow tanker trucks to go through, and one of them is the Talbot Tunnel. I don't think it's been mapped.
Oh?
Oh, yeah, that's because they had that wreck on the tunnel.
Yeah, I remember
in
the 80s. I grew up in Contra Costa County, and I was still back home when that happened.
Filled that tunnel full of
fire. Everybody in the tunnel.
Yeah.
But what are we going to do with major choke points like that?
Well, but I'm just curious. When a tanker pulls into the port and unloads a whole boatload of gasoline, they got to have storage for that. And then there's one right behind it. And so that fuel can't sit at the port very long. I mean, because there's others coming in that have to unload. So there has to be this constant supply of either pipelines or trucks to get that fuel out of the port so the next load can come in. And a load of gasoline out of a tanker, I'm sure statewide probably isn't a day's supply, is it?
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. You know, one of the things that, Mike, we discovered this when we were running through the numbers, to know that you really are analyzing the data correctly in for supply chain situations, you have to run through multiple data comparisons of both what you think demand is and what you think supply is. And Mike and Skip York have both been super helpful in giving me data about what the estimated production amounts were. And then I got some information on sales data for gas, diesel, and jet fuel. And when I put that up against production, the first question that I asked is, hey, why is Valero making 350% more jet fuel than we use in the States? Well, we dug into that, and then we found out that a significant portion of fuel sales had been left off of the initial analysis of sales because they only looked at what had been taxed.
Yeah, so sales to
aviation and military. Yeah, so it left off 3.8 billion gallons of jet fuel sales.
Hmm.
And when I'm looking at numbers like that, 3.8 billion gallons, I'm not sure how many tankers that is, but I'm not sure if the people who were gauging the different logistical capacity constraints, were they working off the taxable figure or the non-taxable figure? Because there's a hell of a big difference between the two.
Yeah. The difference in the tanker sizes, you know, crude oil tankers, obviously much bigger. Gasoline tankers, I remember right, it's like 250, maybe 300,000 barrels. So you're somewhere around 10 million gallons a day. Gasoline takes like a day and a half to offload the tanker, get it into the system, transport it a few days, a week, and the state uses somewhere around 38 million gallons a day still. You know, studies were done on that versus the EV adoption rates.
And that's gasoline,
much slower. Yeah, gas, just gasoline. And then you got to remember, they got to get the jet fuel in. They got to get the diesel in.
Right.
So, you know, you got all three of those fuels, you know, being shipped and going into the same docks, same ports. They all have to take turns. And that's a lot of time. It's very time consuming.
Do they have that kind of storage at the ports, though, or is it going into a pipeline?
They don't have that kind of storage.
No.
Okay.
It's a constraint. Yeah.
That's the problem.
So that's a choke point right there.
Yeah. That dog don't hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That dog don't hunt. We're not going to be able to pull this much fuel through the ports. And the thing is that we're not getting as much right now as we will a year from now because of different kind of constraints and because there's fuel in the downstream part of the supply chain. So the ports aren't seeing the full impact of how much is going to come through yet.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Now, does this gas, does this come into the same ports that, say, freight comes into? Like the big container ships? Is this all coming into the same port?
It definitely comes through the major ports, you know, L.A., Long Beach, Oakland, but it also comes through Stockton, and then, Mike, please go ahead, and I think you know more about the marine.
They are adopting
the refinery adjacent.
Some of the refineries are taking, they converted Valero to basically a port terminal, so they are offloading some there. And then, you know, like CJ was saying, up to Stockton, Oakland, Long Beach, and LA, along with San Francisco, too. They offload directly there into the airport. But, you know, you'll see where they're, if you look at that marinetraffic.com, I've seen quite a few times, even right now, where you'll see tankers, they call them oil chemical tankers, oil product tankers, they're sitting there anchored off in San Pablo Bay, just waiting to offload. Last time I drove there, you could see them on the Bay Bridge. You could see them all parked out there, just waiting for their turn to offload. So that's another, CJ saying, it's a big supply chain bottleneck.
Yeah.
To get all that fuel to go, you know, for instance, Valero, 92% or so of its fuel went by pipeline. All the fuel they made, it went by pipeline. They trucked out maybe 7 or 8% of it. So, you know, that access is critical, and that's a big part of the problem that you're having. And the ports, it goes back to California was an energy island. It was never designed to bring in fuel. It was designed to bring crude oil into their piers, unload that crude at a very fast. They could pump that crude real fast. You know, produce the products at the refinery, and then use the already, you know, all the infrastructure that has already been put in place to, you know, test the fuel, ship the fuel, get it out of there, ship it to Concord, ship it to Brisbane up north. And then they distribute it to Kinder Morgan in Brisbane. They distribute it to the end users. So that's where the big problem is. And the ports, they're not designed for it. They never were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I look at that. That sounds to me like the major bottleneck is going to be the ports, because you're not going to be able to bring in and offload it fast enough to supply the demand. I mean,
no, you can't.
It's impossible.
That's the problem. That's the big problem. But like CJ's saying, how many trucks? You know, those trucks don't exist. The infrastructure to offload the fuel into those trucks doesn't exist. It's just not even close. It's not even on the same planet.
Yeah.
Because they just were not designed for it. They were designed for cargo.
Right. Now, when those ships come in, they don't, like, pull up to the dock. They unload out to a pipe out in the bay, don't they, or do they?
No, they have. I'm sorry, CJ. Go ahead.
No, you were saying the same thing. They go up to the berth. In most cases, they go adjacent to the dock.
Hmm. Okay.
I think they're thinking maybe. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I'm just saying. I think some oil offloading is done. Maybe off the berth, but 90 plus percent of it they pull right up, and they have loading offloading arms and they hook up, and that's the way they do it. So, yeah. You know, once the ship's there, it's there. And it doesn't, you know, it's not like 10 minutes later, it's empty and unhooked and gone. It's, you know, you're looking at a day, day and a half, 2 days of getting it in there and getting it secured, offloading it, and going from there. So,
and the other part of this that we're, I mean, that's assumed in this discussion is that this isn't like 2020 and 2021 where we basically blew up our own world and then finally figured out, okay, everybody's not going to die. I guess we can, you know, restart the engines and go back to normal. This runs the risk of being a permanent catastrophic failure if it's not addressed. This isn't a temporary bump because in the road. We're just going to make some adjustments. Like, we're blowing up our own system.
But also, with the pandemic, you know, there's a lot that we didn't know. People wanted to be safe. And the world was in that together. Right? And I think that the last thing, the world being in this together, that's what we have different here, you know? This is a situation, certainly when it comes to the fuel end of it.
Oh, yeah.
This is the creation of California's government. We did this to ourselves. You know, if there were issues about emissions from the refineries, there are better ways to address those rather than tapping into that. You know, couldn't we just really address the emission problems? There's some very advanced filters. Catalytic converters, or even carbon capture systems where we can take that CO2 and make it into something to make money out of. You know, we could work on the real business problem that is causing higher emissions.
Yeah,
but you're forgetting that it makes a lot more sense to ship it across the ocean and create, I don't know how much more CO2 than we were ever producing at a refinery. So,
well, a lot of other toxic emissions besides CO2.
Yeah, let's do that.
That black smoke is unburned hydrocarbon. That's not CO2. So you get a lot of that, and then you got one thing that's real hard for us to measure is the refineries in the other countries. And I haven't went and measured any of them in India or South Korea, but those refineries would be gross polluters in California.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
They would fall under California gross polluting category, not just polluting more, gross polluters.
Mm-hmm. How is this going to affect the availability of fuel to the rest of the country? I mean, I don't think they're going to be too wild about experiencing shortages because California isn't getting enough fuel, so we're going to give them ours.
Yeah, but the other part of it is they're going to get to pay for it. That's the truly egregious part is we're going to force the federal taxpayer. You know, when we start talking about the Army Corps of Engineers, we start talking about all these things where we're going to have to roll in all these federal systems. Federal taxpayers pay for that. So everyone throughout the entire country is going to be on the hook to pay for this.
For our bed management.
How terrible.
Yeah, it's like the logistics, you know, that CJ's so knowledgeable in, you know. You're pulling all this fuel from the defensive districts, fuel storage, the PAD districts, 3-in-1, which are not ours. They're from around the country, and we're pulling a lot of fuel from both of those. And when they start to run low, then they'll have no choice but to cut back the fuel to us. And at the same time, you know, cut back our shipment. So we're already short. And then you'll be in a situation where they're starting to run a little short on their end. Their refineries are at 98%. They have to cut some of those back and go into turnaround. They can't keep running like that. So, yeah, it's the contagion effect all the way rolls through the country, mm-hmm. through the operation of their equipment and through the supply chain. It's all tied together.
It is all tied together. And, you know, we've thrown around a bunch of numbers here, and that is all posted on the page for today. And I also posted, since we have the gas crisis tab on the site and the gascrisis.org the kind of direct link to go to that. I put another drop down and called it supply chain. So I added CJ's information, and I added the paper that she sent us that has all this great stuff. I'm sitting here looking at it, and the terrific graphic that I sketched for you earlier when we got tangled in wine and wearing other people's clothes and stuff in the first hour. If you missed that, you can go back and listen to that again.
The show is going off the rails.
You should have heard us the couple of weeks ago when we were actually off the air, but they weren't sure we were off the air, so Alex
that was a great show.
Alex told us to talk about nothing, so it turned out we actually talked about nothing for 90 minutes, and we talked to no one about nothing, which really was a new low after...
It's a great show nobody will ever hear.
Almost 16 years of...
I regret that I can't...
We actually said things that were super inappropriate, thinking if someone's hearing this, they'll call. Certainly they'll call. Oh, my God. Well,
you do? That's fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. I told some inappropriate jokes I learned at the emergency room. So anyway, that paper is there. Back to serious business. The paper is there at gascrisis.org. But you can find all the stuff for today's show at wethepeopleradio.us.
Number four was weeping on his knees. He offered up his wedding ring for a sup of diesel, please. But the nozzle is a highwayman, a robber in a mask. And the taxman's got his greedy straw into every single flask. Oh, it's an arm and a leg just to keep the tank fed. So I'm tipping a keg of the Guinness instead. Tell the lads in the desert and take their golden barrels and to shove them in the pump. I'm done with the petrol, I'm done with the gas. They can take their high prices and kiss me rosy ass. The stout, and I'm running on Guinness till the barrels run out.
Yep, because my people don't do wine. We do have an alternate beverage. It was really hard to kind of cut that song. I had to have some like little burps in the middle to fix the words. Unfortunate. So, CJ, I was like kind of... I was cutting to the chase here. About time. Here we go. I was looking... All right, I'm looking at immediate opportunity reopen Valero Benicia. So, 2.12 billion gallons of annual fuel production. More than 55% of the refinery capacity lost. 5.8 million gallons every day. I mean, so if they go put that all back, what is the... We've already kind of said we don't know how long it'll take and all the problems that might go with that, but let's say everybody put their shoulder to the wheel, really paid attention. We didn't let California be in charge of any of it, and now we found some actual people who know science and production. How quickly does this turn the corner to either of you? You both have different perspective on it from the supply side and from the actual fuel side. What do you think?
Well, Mike, if you had all the resources that you needed to reopen Valero, how long would it take? Assuming you had all the resources you needed, how long would that take?
A lot of unknowns. Minimum 8 months.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, pretend all the people who were gone. I mean, this is obviously imaginary land, right? So, you know, bring back all qualified people. You don't have any problems with that. You don't have any problems with anything. To just turn it back on, get things back in the system. Like, it's a long time.
You have to get back.
The one thing I wanted to ask is, in some cases when you restart an operation, it goes from a trickle to a flow. So when you talk about 8 months, Mike, is that before the 8 to 8 months to a 12-month mark, Does the triple restart, or is that to restart it even at the smallest level?
No, to restart it at a small level and get it up. There's a lot of things you got to bring back, things that are normally there for a restart after a turnaround that are gone. Inventories are gone, intermediates, tank levels, oils, chemicals, MEA, acids, all that stuff's all gone. Catalyst, fluid coke, that's all gone. And you'd have to bring, it's impossible to bring the people back. You'll basically have to go into a mode similar to where they were in 1968, 1969 when they were building the plant and they hired classes. Mm-hmm. They hired, I forget how many classes, 25, they called them technicians. It was quite a few, 35 times, at least eight, maybe nine classes, and you have to train them. So what you have to get back is a few people that know the units on the B complex and a few people that know the units on the A complex that can teach new people. Like you said, you can get someone that's motivated from high school. They can learn and be a good, be a very good operator. You have to go into that mode where you're starting from scratch. It's just like you just built the refinery back in 1968, 69. So you got to get that. That's the quickest, and it's not going to be fast, but that would be the quickest way to get people up to speed. The difficulty is going to be the control room because it is the most complex control room in the state. None are like it. Every unit on another refinery, every unit has its own control room and its own operators. At Valero, there's a B complex and an A complex, and on the A complex, where it was like me or Charles or me and Dave or whoever were running that A complex, you would normally have like six other control room control boards there. Well, in this case, it's just one, and you're running all those units that tie together. That's what makes Valero even more challenging, is I call it its unique complexity. It was a pioneer design refinery when it was built. I don't know, there was no refinery like it in the world. That was built like it was built. And there were a few that have been built like that since, but there's still a few and far between and definitely nothing in California. So that would be the thing. You'd have to get all those, any inspections, any type of problems it has, they got to be fixed. And then you got to get the people trained. You got to get people trained up, and hopefully you get enough people that can. I think I had a few of my friends said they'll come back. They're not control room, but they could definitely teach classes, like on the CAT unit, the Coker, the crew unit. They could definitely teach classes on them, especially because the equipment, everything's still there, just not running. But that's where your great bottleneck would be. You can get the materials back. That's where a lot of the cost of the money comes from. You can get the materials back. You can repair things that need to be repaired, but you got to get the people trained up. So that'll be the biggest bottleneck. And that's why I say probably closer to a year. They should never have let it went down. That was a big mistake.
Well, see, that's the... So let's shift back over to the wider supply chain discussion. So as you're looking at this mess in a broad scope, CJ, if they keep going where they're going, what do you see as kind of the phase out? What do we get rid of that we can't run? I mean, is that what happens when you run out of fuel? Do you just shut your industries down?
Well, you got to keep your ports going. You got to keep your
If you don't have any marine diesel, like how are you said, bringing
you
in keep your fuel?
Military. You got to try to keep your airports going as best you can. Of course, the military takes priority, and then you got to have the ports running. Then, what do you think, CJ?
Well, and then you have to have your emergency services have to be fueled.
Yes.
I've reached out to California Highway Patrol, Cal Fire, all that, to try and make sure that they knew the magnitude of the situation.
Do you get the impression that they know this?
No, 100% they don't. I'm sure that they don't. That our elected officials, our agencies, including the California Energy Commission, nobody's working off the right data. Nobody is looking at the right data. One of the fundamentals of supply chain is the interconnectivity of all things. And these agencies are only looking to the end of their purview. And that's just not how it works. if you only look to the end of your purview, that means that you've dropped something off a ledge. And that's, you know, that's just not a, that's not a luxury that any supply chain professional has. So what happens, Aaron, my friend, the cost of fuel goes up to the point where your ordinary family is really having trouble making the trip to work. I fear that we're in for a major economic recession driven by the fuel shortage. We must remember that everything at some point got there on a truck,
mm-hmm.
right? And the fuel is one of those things that raises the cost of everything.
Yep.
It raises the land, the cost of goods, so we're going to have not only fuel go up, and that impacts families everywhere, but your food and every last little thing is going to go up in price. And when that happens, then purchasing starts, the consumer purchasing starts to slow, and then we have excess inventories at manufacturers, and we have the foundation for a recession. And this is something that will head us towards a recession if we do not get our house in order. And California is just too big of a beast. We'll bring other people down with us.
That's what I was just going to ask. Is this an encapsulated crisis, or is this a contagion?
No. Yeah, because it all interconnects. You know,
uh-huh.
you don't have something happen in the supply chain anywhere without it impacting the rest of the supply chain somewhere. One of our good examples is a few years ago, there was a volcano eruption in Iceland that shut down the global air freight system, right? And so you have global air freight impacted in LAX. It didn't even go near Iceland.
Yeah.
So it's all, and that, you know, that also gives us a nice holistic message of, look, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Everybody, every last little one of us, we cannot leave anybody behind. The whole world has to win for the world to win the most, right? It's going to keep impacting working families, industry, government services. I'm real concerned about things like wildfire response. That's coming.
That's coming
if we don't fix it.
Yeah, because, I mean, up where we are, we have had some really significant fires. We've had some here recently. We hear the bombers flying over the house, back and forth, mm-hmm. fueling up to... If you don't have all that...
You don't have bombers.
Right.
Yeah, so how much of the port traffic is being, displaced or slowed down or whatever by having all of these fueling ships coming in?
I don't know the exact numbers myself, but I would say the CJ's shortage down there at that Shell station is a symptom of that.
I think that the ship, I don't think that the tanker vessels, because they go into a different terminal than the container vessels.
Okay.
So I think that the vessels will come through, the vessels will come through without slowing container traffic. However, you have a whole heck of a lot more trucks going in
yeah.
for fuel.
Yeah.
So it will impact the last mile delivery of those containers and may slow being able to get containers out of the port.
Well, and anybody who spends much time on the road knows that it's always so much more exciting if we have a lot more trucks.
Yeah.
Right, and trucks that are essentially traveling firebombs.
Yeah, right.
Won't that be fun?
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
right. How could that be a problem? Huh. Back to the I'll put you in a truck and help people look for you. Wow. Which I did post on our gas crisis page because it just called out to me today.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we have to take a really quick break, but on that unpleasant note, I found finally the correct information for the plumber. So for those of you that are still going, what plumber? The guy from the beginning of the show, you got to go back, listen to the first hour. So if you're having a plumbing issue and you live in the Reading area, it's hotwaterplumbinghero.com. His name is Robert. And people named Robert are very helpful. Robert does our archives for the show here, too. Thanks, Robert. You can find them at 888-482-4287. But just go to hotwaterplumbinghero.com. All the info's there. He'll come out and fix all your stuff and won't overcharge you. Yay. Doesn't even make a mess. Doesn't wear his shoes in your house or anything, and he's fun. And I learned a lot. I got to watch. It's kind of fun.
You can do it next time.
Yeah. Well, I did it before.
I'm excited.
One of the few times I've ever hired a plumber. Usually it's me swearing under the sink, but it was Robert. Be right back. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Who is it?
CJ, you can put that on your website, see, and that can be your disclaimer. That way, if you say anything crazy, you can just say, I know too much. And there's a whole song. And there's a whole song about it. So bottom line is, that song means that's why we're all crazy. Because the more we learn about this, the more crazy you feel.
It's a little scary when you start diving into it.
I mean, what the heck? And then, of course, people are just like, well, it hasn't happened, so I guess it's not going to happen.
Well, the thing is, too, they don't. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, honey. I'm sorry.
No, you finish.
No, you
finish. We do this.
Oh, they don't. They don't. They don't see. They get false reporting all the time. When the prices started going up in January, when Valero pulled the plug, the news kept saying they were going down in April. Remember, we had talked before. Prices were up to 80-90 cents a gallon in Redding and Chico when Valero shut down before the war even started. That was all the logistics. That was the ports. That was the inability to offload the fuel to get the fuel here. And these prices go through the roof. People constantly ignore that we're $2 to $2.50 a gallon more than the rest of the country. They're constantly ignoring the fact that the rest of the country isn't even beginning to talk about shortages. They're not even talking about shortages of fuel anywhere except in our state. Our state is the problem.
Right. And then the whole Iran thing, let's weave that in. CJ, where does that fit in the scope of all things here? For the people who think that this is all caused by that,
if this is one of those situations where, I've been an independent voter for 40 years, so I'm voting independent before it was cool. This is one of those situations where the two major parties they each have a piece of this. Okay, folks, we cannot say, this is all the Dems, this is all the Republicans. Everybody owns a plot, okay? Everybody owns a piece. The upstream part of this, the war interrupts what we make gas out of in a tremendous amount. And it's going to, we're going to have, we already have fertilizer shortages. It's going to impact food. So this means that for the first time in history, since we've been using petroleum, there is a gap in that supply that has never existed before. There are empty spots in that supply, and you hear people talk about where tanks and pipelines and things have gotten below a level where they become, they can't function. You know, they need to run all the time, and they stop, and it's Mike, you can probably speak to this the best. It kind of gets the material that's left there gets smooth in it, and now it, even if you reintroduce the crude oil or the fuel to that pipeline, you would have trouble moving it through. So we literally have a major disruption at every phase of the supply chain for fuel and all things made from petroleum, including slurry oil, asphalt, anything that's a petroleum product. You know, this petroleum products go into any kind of adhesive, most beauty products. They're more far-reaching than people realize. If we looked around the rooms that we're in right now, you probably couldn't find a single thing that doesn't contain a petroleum product or was made with the aid of a petroleum product. So it's really very far-reaching. The reason that the war is the reason that I am pressing federal California elected to extract California oil. Now, that sweet crude can't be used everywhere, but it does introduce new supply into the supply chain that didn't exist before. Yeah,
It'll offset the 60% that we're importing. Our biggest vulnerability came from the the Gulf, the Asian countries losing their crude oil supply, and then us, we lost 30% of it. We're pretty much the only state in the country that's importing crude oil from the Middle East.
And this is all being done. I mean, let's not lose sight of why we have blown up our own world, and that's all because we want more environmental happiness. We think we're making the air cleaner. We've put all these things in place to make all these improvements, and it's having the exact opposite effect in putting everything that we care about, including our safety, security, and food production, at risk.
Like, one of the things that we need all politicians to understand is if your pollution causes job loss, you have developed the wrong solution. You probably have misidentified the root cause of the problem. Nerd out here for a second. The problem-solving methodology used in supply chain and just backing up a little bit, the definition of supply chain is every step in the process of getting a product or a service to the customer. So that includes logistics operations. Essentially, the supply chain runs the economy. We're the operators of the economy, right? I'm sorry, I put on my teacher hat and I totally lost.
No, it's okay. I mean, because point A, you know, we talk about getting things from point A to point B. Well, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. The supply chain is the route between point A and point B.
Right. It's gonna include all of that. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Stalling for time.
I owe you big for that one.
Mm-hmm.
The problem solving methodology used in supply chain and operations is called Six Sigma. And it's also used in like quality control. And that teaches you how to get to the root cause of a problem. And what we find when we do solve the root cause of a problem is that you have this delightful chain reaction of solving a whole bunch more problems that you really didn't expect to solve. My There's Cash in That Trash program did that. We solved the root cause. We got a whole bunch of other benefits that come along. Similarly, if you identify a symptom of a problem as the root cause and you try and solve that symptom as if it was the root cause, you will cause a chain reaction of harm.
Huh.
And that is what I see our government do again and again and again, resolving the wrong problem.
Yeah. Well, exactly. and we talk about this a lot. People who, you know, still have that logic module engaged. You know, if you're not factoring in the economic impact of what you're doing before you do it, you have no business making decisions. Like, you should not be in the decision-making seat.
You have to protect family prosperity. And if you cannot protect family prosperity and children through protecting the environment, it means that you don't have the skill set to do that, because those are not separate things. We can protect prosperity and the environment at the same time. We do not have to sacrifice one for the other. The government, I constantly see this in California with the expansion of the bioenergy system. They put emission standards on these systems that add like $1.5 million to a project, and they neglect to include how many emissions we are eliminating by processing the waste where it is created. So I'm trying to save the woodworking sector in California. California is the largest manufacturing state in the nation. We are still one of the leaders in woodworking, furniture manufacturing, all of those things. And at the same time, California is throwing away over 40 million tons of waste a year. The solution for that, including the wood that contains some glue, little plastic, all the rest of that, is to convert it into electricity at the site that is created. And these systems that do that are very clean air, very enclosed. They're terrific. And even just that one mid-sized manufacturer, when that system goes into place, it takes 800 truck trips off the road a year. We don't get credit for taking those truck trips off the road a year.
Right.
No fairsies.
Right? Yeah.
You want to drive investment that lowers emissions. And every time we take something that is rotting, like organic waste, out of the environment, we remove methane, right? This process removes methane and it sequesters carbon. And it is just a devil to get past the, there's really unreasonable air quality standards. It cannot cost another $1.5 million to do in California than it does in Oregon. Oregonians care about their environment. So we do need, you know, we need people to really, the phrases that are coming to mind are, you know, let's go behind the shed. We need to have a conversation.
Actually, I just sent you both.
You, me, and a 2x4.
I just sent you both, like, you know, a couple of our memes here that would sum up our thing. And remember Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride?
Yeah,
remember him? There's this terrific meme of him, and it says, "Let me explain. No, there is too much to sum up." I'm like,
oh my god,
that was I saw it right when you were saying that. I'm like, oh, I think this might be because it's true.
If
you have to explain this to them, you know, you can explain it, but you can't understand it for them. I don't know how, and people keep, you know, they're not electing each other. People are
like
sending them to this, you know, to the legislature.
Yeah, but what are they? Yeah. The whole different problem for me is an individual who's looked at running for office. It just takes too much money. It's the money that is the barrier there. Mm-hmm. And the,
kind
know,
of. I mean,
that.
I guess if the districts weren't so, well, like, look at what they did up here. Our district now, our congressional district, is 700 miles end-to-end. So it goes from Sausalito up to Alturas in the far northeast corner of the state. So, yeah, that's going to take a bunch of money because there's no way you can hit all those media markets. There's no way you can travel all those miles. There's no way you can get information out to a swath of land that big. I mean, it's just not so possible. Just, you know, nobody has that kind of time. You can't meet that many people. You're not going to live that long, especially in 2026 when... seems like it's taking one person out to the next, but you have people that are really wholly unqualified for the position, but oh, he or she's a nice guy, yes. So we keep electing them, and I'm like, bad choice.
Or they're, you know, yeah, they're well connected, they've got money in their pocket, you know, whatever it is. But you know what, the other thing, Aaron, is that there's absolutely all heck of a lot of behind the scenes power. I have had tremendous influence just sitting on committees. So, yeah, okay, I hear you on the elected, but we can definitely do more. Those elected officials, whether they like it or not, they still are just our supplier of services and infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that citizens need to realize is that when they tell us all we have is our vote, that's baloney.
No.
It's a lot more power.
There are a lot of other things we can do. We now have 25 seconds left, so I guess unfortunately we have to bid you the unceremonious goodbye. But we need to do this again soon, and still goof off anyway because we really enjoyed it.
Happy to come.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for
coming on.
CJ Nord, Mike Ariza, you guys have a lovely Sunday.
Thanks again, Aaron.
Bill and Aaron signing off. The commercial free archive is available at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good.